Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast, where we're talking with shaman and licensed professional counselor Miriam Lieberman. In today's show, Miriam discusses how shamanic ceremonies differ from traditional talk therapy as a healing modality, and she explains what a soul retrieval is. We cover the biggest way that humans are out of balance and how connecting with nature can help you heal from trauma. We talk about discerning between harmful and benevolent spirits and about how the drum acts as a canoe into the spirit world.
We're your hosts, sisters Natalie
and Lizzie Ross.
Dream Freedom Beauty is a podcast for free spirits who yearn to connect deeply with their intuition and manifest their dream lives in harmony with the earth.
You can find the podcast show notes at dreamfreedombeauty.com.
Miriam Lieberman, also known as Firebird, is dedicated to helping people heal what no longer serves them so they can devote their attention to what they wish to do with their lives. She has a master's degree in counseling psychology, and in addition to offering professional counseling services, she also guides people through indigenous and shamanic healing ceremonies. Miriam feels that with our fast-paced, overextended, and fragmented lifestyles, connecting with nature is an important part of the healing process. To support others in connecting with nature, she holds retreats, ceremonies, and sweat lodges at her medicine lodge and land called Drum Song Sanctuary for the Soul, outside of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Miriam, why is our connection with nature important?
Well, it's where we come from. We are animals. We, in my view, are pack animals, and we need our pack, and we need to feel connected to the earth. I know myself, when I don't have connection to the earth, I start to feel panicky. I once had an office that didn't have any windows and I couldn't stay awake in there. I was awful. So I personally have to have connection to the earth, and I think it keeps us grounded. It helps us to remember who we are. And I don't know the science behind it, but I'm convinced that it affects our electromagnetic fields, such as in the book Earthing. That describes that very well.
And I love what you said about us being pack animals.
Me too.
That more and more I'm feeling that of like, I just want to be with my tribe and with my pack and my community. And it feels so good to be around people who are of, you know, similar mind and who love the same things.
Right. I mean, it's wonderful to be very inclusive and have a diverse community to mingle and grow with. But I think if there's something about wanting to be with people that we resonate with as well.
Yeah, definitely.
As a safe place. Mm.
Definitely, definitely.
It's good to come home to that.
How does our relationship with nature reflect our relationship with our inner landscapes? Like, on a personal level, say, how would the character of my relationship with nature reflect how I interact with my own multi-dimensional inner self?
I don't feel a separation between me and the earth. So yeah. It's like, I can't even imagine not being connected to the earth. So my inner landscape feels the same in some way as when I walk out the door. So what I can say, for some reason, what I'm remembering is when I built this house.
Yeah.
And like the first day when we could like get in the house, and I set a chair like in the middle of the living room here, and there's no curtains or anything. And I spun the chair around and I could see out of a window in every single direction out into nature. And I remember feeling like, okay, nature can see me as much as I can see nature. Mm. And that being able to look out and see a tree or hear the owl or the hawk is how I know that I'm alive. Mm-hmm. Like that I'm not just in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I'm always listening for the signs of nature. Even when I'm cooking or sleeping, like I don't like when I have to have the windows closed because I can't hear the birds and the owls out there, and so I start to feel like isolated. Mm. So me, it's like I can almost like hear those little daffodils popping out of the earth out there. It's like I need to feel that connection.
Yeah, I never even considered that the answer would be that you feel so connected with the earth that you can't separate the two. I mean, that's so awesome. So then moving on to like healing and connecting with nature from the perspective of someone who's maybe not aware of themselves as a part of nature, how can connecting with nature help these people heal from psychological or emotional trauma?
Well, it calms the nervous system, you know, I mean, literally resets our electromagnetic fields to be out, whether one is walking by water, the sounds are calming, the smells, the colors. Having spent a little time recently in Brooklyn, where there's not a lot of green, I became so hyper aware there of my connection to nature. And I was like desperately looking for any little plant to look at, you know, something green popping out of the sidewalk somewhere. And when I get home and I drive home and I'm like, oh my God, it's like a cellular relaxation. And so I think that there are ways we can use our imagination. We can use journeying. We can use all kinds of ways to recreate in our mind's eye nature. But I don't know that anything really replaces the smell of soil or the feel of a flower petal in one's hand. And that beauty creates that sense of gratitude. And without gratitude, we're just robots. You know, without feeling, you know, what does that lettuce leaf feel like and taste like? And so our priorities get askew. So for me, when I'm working with people who are really ungrounded and grieving and feeling isolated and disconnected, having them sit with a tree, their back to a tree, and feel that sap rising and feel the connection with that tree and their root chakra on the ground and feeling that expanse coming up through their body is a beginning place to reconnect with their own source.
I love that you've connected beauty with gratitude. A lot of times people will say, what's the use of beauty? But there's one.
Well, and does everything have to have a use?
No. Not in my world.
One of the elders that I have learned from said, we are not here to be efficient.
That makes me feel so much better about so many things.
Yes. So Miriam, speaking of elders, you have studied shamanism in certain American Indian medicine traditions, and you perform ceremonies such as soul retrievals and dream journeying. When did you first learn about this path of shamanism?
Well, I'm not really sure. I was always intrigued, even as a child, by Native American practices. And I first met the first elder that I worked with. I went to it wasn't exactly a powwow. It was a gathering of elders in California. Twilaneach was there, Sun Bear was there, Charlie Tom was there. It was the first time I was in a sweat lodge, and I met a woman there who came up to me and said, you're supposed to meet Grandpa Roberts. And I was like, well, who's that? And we had just come out of this lodge. She told me he was this elder, Cherokee elder, who lived in California. And that I was just supposed to meet him. I'm like, okay, well, what's his number? How do I reach him? And so I contacted him and I went with my friend Donald, bless him. He's on the other side now. And it was one of those moments in life where I knew when I walked up to that door that if once I crossed that threshold, that my life would never be the same again. Mm. And so he was my first teacher in this lifetime, in this body, but we had been together before.
Mm-hmm. That gave me goosebumps.
Me
awesome.
Too.
Yeah.
So you knew at some level that you were called to do this work. How did you know that?
It's the only thing that ever made sense to me. Like I grew up in a Jewish sort of, we were not real religious, but my parents were both Holocaust survivors. So we, you know, we belonged to a temple, I guess, just to try to have some kind of community, really. And there were some of those practices that I liked, like building a sukkah and having the fruit. Once again, that was the nature connection. the pieces that felt natural to me, you know, but what really, the only thing that ever made sense to me was earth-based practices. And everything I ever read about Native American ceremony and practices, I just started reading things early on. I don't know. I don't really know why or how, but it's what made sense to me. It's what moved my soul. It's what brought tears to my eyes. I also related to the oppression of the people themselves by the patriarchal societies, having also come from a culture that was squashed. And so no matter what country we come from, we all have an indigenous root somewhere.
Do you think that has to be from our own heritage, or can it be one from the land that we live on, or just, I mean, this day and age, can it be just whatever calls to us, that indigenous root?
Yes.
All of them. All of the
above. Yeah. And I, you know, just a couple moments earlier, you said that you felt you had met Grandfather Roberts, you know, sometime before you had worked together. So the question of what tribe or nationality we really belong to in this body, in this life, is in a way a sort of limited perspective if you're thinking about multiple lifetimes, and you could reach into any one of those pasts or dimensions and connect to a history that resonates with you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So how do these shamanic ceremonies differ than just doing traditional talk therapy? Because you offer, for those who are interested, shamanic ceremonies in addition to more traditional counseling.
My other teacher, Will Rockingberry, used to say, or one of my other teachers, I should say, that psychology can take you 60% of the way, but you've got to involve your soul and your spirit in order to really heal. I also believe it takes a village, it takes the community, because so many people, especially the clients that I have served, predominantly people with abuse and neglect histories, who have felt abandoned and neglected by their community as well. Children who may or may not have tried to get help, but never felt like anybody saw them or heard them or responded or got them into a safe place. Or women who've been raped by someone in the community. And so by coming to a ceremony and being in a circle, again, our pack, our tribe, others who are witnessing us going into a sweat lodge where we all are equal. That's the thing about shamanism. And we are equal to the trees and the stones and the water and the four-leggeds and the two-leggeds and the crawly ones. And so there's no hierarchy of any of those being better. And so it's a great equalizer to be in ceremony where we're all there to heal. And so it's also a taking action. So one of the best things for anxiety is to take an action. Mm-hmm. So anxiety is very much centered often on the future, like what's going to happen. Oh my God, you know, I'm so nervous, blah, 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 blah. And depression often has to do with the past. And, you know, they can intermingle, but being able to take that past and put it in the fire and watch it burn. Mm. Taking those actions is very strong. So, you know, therapy is only as good as the insights that we get from it and the actions that we take as a result of that. So otherwise, we're just talking ourselves in circles.
So the ceremony offers both community to witness you and to support you, and also it offers you, you know, you as the healee, being able to take action and become empowered about how you are living your life.
And it also gives you the opportunity to witness someone else's healing, so that it's not about I'm broken and I need you. It's about we're all in this together. Mm. And so it's not one-sided.
Yeah. Expanding on that, what energies are amplified when people gather for ceremony in community? I mean, we touched on it a little bit, how we're all broken, but...
Well, and we're all also not broken. You know, it's not really a, it's not really like a choice of words, and I realize I threw it out there, but shamanism is actually not about pathology and being broken. It's about getting in balance. It's about finding where we're out of balance and restoring balance. So it's not an allopathic type of...
Right. Find the problem, fix it. Right. What role has being in community with others played in your life and your experiences as a shaman?
Well, it's given me so many opportunities to heal myself, as well as to be an agent of healing for others. So going to Vision Quest ceremony every year for the past 15 years, some of those years I was on the mountain. Some of those years I was in the kitchen. Some of those years I was at the fire. Some of those years I was working the perimeter. But it's all same, same, different. We're all there questing and looking for how to be our best self. And in ceremony, it brings out the best in us. I mean, we can also go into ceremonial psychosis, which is, you know, where we have so much energy, we don't know what to do with it. And we need to give it away to the earth. We need to give it away to other humans. We need to give it away to trees and hug and get grounded. The community is there to serve as a mirror, as a grounding rod, as a place to grow with and from, to be challenged. I mean, it's all the microcosm of the universe right there in a small circle of people.
Miriam, you said just now that shamanism is about being in balance. Can you tell us more about what that means as a practice?
It has to do with our, literally our physical balance. Like, am I grounded? Am I, you know, top heavy? Am I moving through space only being aware of what's in front of me, but not behind me, or vice versa? How am I relating spatially in the world? So there's that balance. Mm-hmm. There is balance of body, mind, spirit. So am I all in my head, or am I in my heart? You know, there's a saying is that the hardest journey is to take that 15 inches from head to heart, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's the spirit mind, which lives down here in the belly. And so am I in balance, or am I, you know, am I operating only from my emotions and not able to use my discernment? Or am I simply analyzing, going through life analytically, but never actually feeling and being in my heart and speaking from my heart? And so there's that kind of balance. Yes, there's a balance between this world and other worlds. So, you know, am I paying attention to what's happening in the unseen world around me, which we can all do if we develop those senses? Are my relationships in balance? Is my work life and my personal life in balance?
I feel like work-life balance is an especially important topic these days, as people are so focused on work and they think that's going to get them to a better life. When in fact, just living a good life is going to get you to your better life now. So, and so shamanism can probably help you realize that and then bring you, you know, help you accept letting go of whatever you're out of balance with.
Well, some of the tools that we use in shamanism are drums, rattles, the elements, water, fire, herbs, cornmeal, all of these things that come from the earth that carry their own rhythm, their own sense. And so those are also ways to help us. I think as humans, our biggest way of being out of balance is thinking that we are somehow important, that we are somehow more important than anything else. And that right off the bat, we are way out of balance.
Interesting.
Do you mean as a species, as individuals, across the board?
Across the board.
Yeah.
Something that I've been thinking about lately is how we're trained by our parents and we're trained by society to commit, basically to commit acts of psychic violence towards ourselves from a very young age. Someone tells us to stop doing something or that we'll never be good at this, or someone tells us, and especially with men, they are, you know, molded into the idea of the macho strong man and the sensitivity and the feminine balance is like not beat out of them,
but pruned. Physically.
Yeah. And so it's, I characterize it as a psychic act of violence towards ourselves. And I mean, do you see this as maybe a really a root cause of a lot of things that are happening with people?
Yes.
And so what are alternatives for parents who don't want to teach their children that it's normal or necessary to dissociate or commit this self-violence?
First of all, I wouldn't necessarily say that dissociation is self-violence. Sometimes dissociation is self-preservation. Mm-hmm. So
interesting.
In the face of violence. So dissociation is a very needed and tool of the human mind and psyche to protect us. I don't know that it's possible or even desirable to never have any experiences in life that one could interpret as unpleasant or maybe even violent. I abhor the idea of violence and that we perpetrate that upon one another. I think it's ignorance that is more frightening to me, that we hide behind doctrines and ideas that perpetuate the idea that we are intrinsically bad.
Mm. Mm. That we're bad, but yet we're better than everything at the same time.
Isn't that interesting?
It yeah.
is. Miriam, I wonder if you could unpack for us, when we talk about violence, what are we talking about?
Well, I mean, it can be, you know, the very obvious violence that we see every day, people being yelled at, hit, slapped, so like molested, raped.
The qualities are force, shot. Harm.
Well, it always involves power over. So violence involves someone or something exerting power over someone or something else, whether it be, you know, the tractor to the earth, which could be an act of violence, or could be an act of beauty if we're going to plant food there. Are we destroying something just for the sake of destroying it for entertainment's sake? Or are we creating something that will serve the people out of that? So, but violence can also be a word. It can be a denigration of the spirit, something as simple as demeaning a young child who's running around in the rain naked, playing and laughing, and telling them that that's bad. And then their soul is just stripped of that beautiful, delicious, free experience of what it's like to be a part of nature.
Mm, so they get that little imprint that joy and that freedom, that wonderful deliciousness is bad. And from that right. spot, you know, maybe that pattern starts to build.
Right, because we induce shame. And so shame is a form of perpetrating violence, shaming someone.
Mm-hmm. I understand what Miriam's saying about how it's not the worst thing. It's not the greatest thing, but it's part of the bag of life to have experiences, good and bad.
Well, how else could we develop our own character and our own strength? I mean, it's like, if all we ever ate was ice cream, we would never know that there's tart and sour and spicy and hot and, you know, all these other things in the world. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any way to extricate ourselves completely from, but I think it's more about being in right relations. So if we do find that we have done harm to something or someone, how do we rectify that?
That is a very good question. How? Well, you know, first of all, I want to take a step back to the perspective of the person who has had this experience and part of them has been shut down. In shamanism, you do something called a soul retrieval. Can you explain what that does and how this can help someone who feels like they've lost part of themselves?
Well, so in psychology, we talk about actually dissociation, which is when we sort of separate from ourselves. You've heard about the person in the operating room who's up on the ceiling, you know, observing, or someone who's in a traumatic situation who's outside of their body, you know, and they've shut down. And so in psychology, they refer to this in sort of a metaphorical sense, but the indigenous people actually talk about pieces of the soul literally chinking off and leaving and going to safety somewhere in the spirit world. And it can be in any of the realms, the lower world, the middle world, the upper world. They can go out to the stars. They can go, you know, all these places. And so the soul retrieval ceremony is designed to help bring those soul pieces back home to the person. There is drumming that takes place. So the way that I was trained, there's a live drummer. I know that some people will use tapes, but I was trained to have a live drummer present. And then with the guides and helpers that I work with, the drum is the canoe that takes us into the spirit world to go and look. And of course, we don't go and look without being asked in a particular way by the person to request that ceremony and having full permission to enter their spiritual life and to do this work. We don't do anything without permission, and we don't go and look until we're in that ceremony. So my experience has been that I've never had anyone come and request a soul retrieval where there wasn't at least one piece that came back. And my sense about that is that people intrinsically know if there's something missing, and they wouldn't be asking for the ceremony if they didn't recognize there's something missing. So when traumas happen in our lives, and they happen throughout our lives, I mean, it's like the little girl in the rain. That's a trauma for her. And I use that example because that actually happened in a soul retrieval where one of the pieces that came back, it was basically something like that. Other traumas, you know, medical traumas, you know, losing your parent in a at the fair, that for a child, that could be hugely traumatic, right? You know, there's just so many ways that we could be traumatized, and they're not always the ones that we think of when we hear the word trauma, which is also overused term these days. But so we go into the spirit world and we look and we bring those pieces back. The most important part of the ceremony is when the person renegotiates terms with those each individual piece and kind of makes a new contract with them about how they will stay with them.
What happens next?
Well, then they make the agreements and the pieces agree to stay. Then they have to keep their word to what they promised they would do.
Hmm.
You know, their job then becomes to honor the agreement that they made.
Miriam, I have heard you talk before about growing corn in our lives, and that sounds a little bit like what it is to grow corn. Can you explain for our listeners what that means?
That saying I learned from Will Rocking Bear, the corn is sacred to the native people. It is what feeds the people. It is representative of abundance in their lives, and the richness of corn comes in every color under the rainbow. And has been a staple in the lives of indigenous people. And so when you say, does your life grow corn? Is there goodness in your life? Is there sweetness? Are you happy? Are you doing what makes your heart sing? Are you dancing to the drummer that lives within you? Are you doing your life's work? So he would often say, you know, you as a person are not very important, but what you've come here to do is.
Because
we're all just specks here in this big old universe, right? You know, I'm not very important as a human being, but hopefully the work that spirit puts before me, if done well, makes a difference somewhere, and that is important.
What's your favorite work to do?
Oh. Well, I've taken an oath to feed the people and so that looks a lot of different ways. It could be bringing a bowl of soup to someone. It could be a soul retrieval. It could be bringing someone to the fire. It could be sitting with someone dying or sitting with someone birthing. It could be making beautiful love to my partner. This is all of being a sacred human being and living life to its fullest. And that includes the entire range of emotions. So my work, my favorite work, is being a sacred human being to the best of my ability, and learning, as I'm learning every day, a little bit more about how to be in right relations with myself, with others, and with the Creator.
Perfect.
So it sounds like treating it as if it were ceremony just to be alive.
Well, if you take the "as if" out of that sentence.
Excellent.
I heard you say that the drum is the canoe into the spirit world. What does that mean?
Well, it's vibration, right? And so vibrational medicine is in everything that we do. So the drum is a living being. It's got the tree. It has the skin of the animal. We call them our ancestors. They're our elders. They're, you know, we treat them with utmost respect. So when we're beating that drum, you can hear many, many tones. You can hear the thwack, 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 but you can also hear the woo. And so those waves go out, and so we ride them. We ride them out to the spirit world. You can also do the same thing with a rattle.
I know that you're very connected with the spirit world, and that's, you know, part of the, just the job of shamanism is going into the spirit world. For someone who's maybe not as familiar with it, can you talk about some of the different kinds of spirits that are on Earth?
Well, you know, every kind imaginable. I don't consider myself an expert at this, so there are probably other people that answer this question much better than I, but there's every kind of person, and there's probably every kind of spirit. My work has dealt mostly with spirits that were connected to individual people, or spirits that resonated with a person, that were hanging around a person because there was something in common, either through a past life or a behavior or an addiction, something that brought those energies together. You know, there's the elementals, there's the little blue people, the fairies, you know, there's all kinds of spirits, angels. I haven't worked as much with the angelic realm as maybe some others. I've certainly felt them at times in doing healings. My gift is more kinesthetic in how I work, so I don't tend to see things that much. I think some people who see may be able to see and distinguish different levels of beings better than I. I get auditory messages sometimes, and I just get that. For me, things come in, and my gift is just in a knowing. So I'm not always certain which spirit. Sometimes I'll get that information, but not always.
Miriam, I've heard you say that the jaguar with 2 feet in the spirit world and 2 feet on Earth is a good model. Can you tell us what you mean by that and what it would look like to live that day to day?
Well, it's a little bit like what I was talking about earlier of, like, even though we're having this conversation right now, I'm constantly noticing it. You know, what was that sound outside? You know, what else is happening? What is the energy in this room right now? And so working with the spirit world is about expanding our awareness out beyond our ears and feeling into the molecules around us and being aware with much more of our being. I mean, we probably on a typical day use some minute percentage of our potential in our mind and our ability to sense. And so it's about expanding that potential and that awareness so that we are listening to more than the radio, or you know, really hearing and noticing what's happening around us. And so when we're in ceremony, what we do is we're inviting those energies to join us, but we're also discerning as we do that, because sometimes when we invite the energies, some show up that maybe aren't so welcome, and so we have to be paying attention.
Got to be a bouncer.
How do you do that? How do you discern between energies you do and don't want to work with? And what are some examples of questions you might ask of a spirit to figure that out?
I would ask, who are you and do you come in a good way? Are you here to be of assistance? Obviously, you know, you're expecting an honest answer.
Yeah, I always wonder, you know, do you have to ask a certain amount of times before you get an honest answer? How can
I think, have you ever walked in a room and all of a sudden just felt your skin crawl?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think that is?
Oh, some yucky could be energy. A whole bunch of different things.
Right, but very often it's an energy, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so we can learn how to track our own perceptions. So one of the things I work with people is to learn what is a yes for you and what is a no for you, mm-hmm. so that you can check your own energy field when you have important questions to ask. So is this a helpful spirit? I can do my own muscle testing with myself to get that answer. So I'm not necessarily relying on what they're saying, although I'm still asking, right? So there's certain sensations that I will get, you know, in my body, or when there's that sense of truth is happening, or when you get that like, ooh, you know, tingle feeling. The hair rises, you know, on the back mm-hmm. of your neck, and it's like, oh, okay, that was truth. Or for me, I might tear up at a certain thing. And so we have to learn what our own personal ways of perceiving energies are and work with that. Hmm.
So for folks out there listening who want to know how to do this, it would be a good practice to start paying attention and noticing, how do you feel when someone lies to you? How do you feel when someone tells you the truth? Where is it in your body? What kind of sensation is it?
Exactly.
So in expanding these perceptions, well, first of all, that sounds like a great opportunity for getting back into balance if you aren't expanding your perceptions. You know, if you're just listening to that small proportion, hey, expand out and check out the rest of the world that's waiting here to interact with you. So in expanding your perceptions in this way, how does that influence the way you experience being in nature?
Is it like, what did you see that you didn't see before?
Yeah, how does it help you be in beautiful relationship with nature and with the earth? Beyond just like, look, a pretty tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, for one, I'm not seeing that tree as an object. I'm seeing that tree as a being. Mm-hmm. And walking through the woods, it's like greeting all these relatives, because we call them all our relations. And mm-hmm. so while I might not be able to identify every bird call that I hear, I'm still paying attention to what are those birds doing? Like, are they alerting themselves or me to some danger? Are they singing their mating song? Are they greeting the morning? You know, what is the sun doing? What are the clouds doing? What is that beautiful pink thing poking up from the earth? Oh, it's the first little spring blossom. You know, it's being in a dynamic relationship with all of this that's happening around us, and not just stomping through the woods, but really noticing, really being present, being grateful, being in relationship with each of these beings, as opposed to dominating over them. Mm-hmm.
Or feeling like you're separate from them, instead exactly. recognizing you're interacting.
Right. It's a relationship.
Yeah. And for me personally, I feel like when we live by a lake in some woods, and I go out and I tell them every day, hello, I love you, you're beautiful. And you know, sometimes I really do feel like when I go out there, if I'm not feeling so good, they're like, hey, check out this beautiful thing I'm doing for you right now. What's up? You know, like, I want you to feel better. And so that's just one aspect of that expanding and connecting that I love so much, is like, you are in relationship with these beings. And
it's a two-way relationship. Yeah, you're listening to them sure talk back to you, Natalie, when you get that. How cool right. is that?
I love that.
Exactly. I mean, like when my son was a teenager and, you know, it was a very angst-filled time for me, not knowing where he was and whose car he was in and, you know, was he safe and what was going on. And I got really anxious. It was a very difficult time for me. And that's when I started gardening. I literally would get on the earth and claw it with my hands and just feel that. And I could feel the earth taking that anxiety from me and helping me to get in balance and to trust that wherever he was also on this earth. Mm. And that's how I began gardening was, well, I had this new house here because we moved here at that time, but it was a symbiotic kind of thing. I'm going to plant something here, but I would just walk around and I'd say, because I didn't really know anything about gardening. But I also didn't want to turn it into like something I had to study. So I would just walk around with a bulb and say, where should this go? And I would talk to the earth and I'd say, show me where to put this and show me how deep to plant it. And, you know, help me to make this place beautiful. And so we did it together.
Mm-hmm. And it is beautiful. It is. You know, I'll put some pictures of your garden in the show notes because I have a lot of pictures and it's awesome. I love that space.
So Miriam, you communicated with the earth through gardening and you love to observe and appreciate the beauty of nature. What are some of your other favorite ways to communicate with the earth and nature spirits?
Swimming. Mm. Preferably skinny dipping if I can find a place to do it.
But always.
They come and they go. People think I'm nuts, but you know, there's nothing like just being in that water in your natural state with that water and feeling the aliveness against the skin and being one with the water spirits. So that would be a huge one for me. Eating food, cooking food.
Mm, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Growing food, crystals, working with the stones, burning different herbs and having a wood stove and fire in my life is hugely important way that I connect with nature. And someone dear to me this week said, did you just talk to the fire?
Of course.
I said, of course, it's a live being. And I'm thanking this fire for keeping me warm. And those are some of the ways.
What is it about that water that you love so much?
Well, some of it is, you know, temperature. If it's hot summer day and you know, sink into a beautiful cool pond, but it's that silkiness. It feels like it is so willing to take away that which is stressful and feels burdensome. And to just, I don't know, ever since I was a little 2 or 3, I just would dive into a body of water. And so it just feels like liquid silk, you know, you know, it washes away the strife and the worries. And it's another way to be very present, because you have to be completely present if your body is, you know, floating or moving through water. Mm-hmm. You can't lose consciousness. You have to stay very present. Mm. I think that in general in nature is about staying very present and being antenna, being just like this big antenna to just like what's happening around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like being in nature because I feel like it offers a space to expand that perception and to turn up the volume on that antenna, and without the like weird stuff that all these man-made things and the humans are carrying around. It's like a nice, clean, clear space.
Yeah. Sometimes when I'm out in nature, I feel like I can safely unfold without infringing on anyone else and without getting accidentally stomped on by the sometimes jarring things that are in our everyday lives, you know, dump trucks and loud music and gunshots. And nature is a safe place to just open up and feel it all.
Mm-hmm. Right. The other thing about water is sort of how it plays with gravity. And so you can experience yourself in a whole different state of buoyancy and lightness that you can't the harder crust of the earth.
Yeah.
You're making me want to go swim.
I know, me too.
Meanwhile, it's January and it's freezing.
It's the coldest it's been in months.
To get to the Bahamas.
Bath time.
I'm wondering if there's any question you might suggest the listeners ask themselves if they are wanting to expand their perception, or is there any guidance you want to share?
Get to know your own nature. Know thyself, because in knowing thyself, then you can mix and meld with others, but have the boundaries that you need to remain your true essence and know what is true for you and what is not true for you. And you can go out into the world. The daffodil is the daffodil, and the tulip is the tulip, and you are you, but you can have interspecies relations when you know who you are and that you are clear about your relationship to all the rest.
Mm. So if you know yourself, you can have dynamic boundaries, and you can afford to open up and feel these things.
Right, and you can feel safe enough in your own self. So many people have really tough time coming up, and you know, they don't have good solid attachment with human caregivers, and so some people can help themselves out by developing that with a special tree or with nature in ways where humans have not been reliable for them, creating any ways that we can feel attached to our own sense of self and the nature and world around us.
Beautiful. Thank you. So where can listeners go to find out more about you and the ceremonies you offer?
Well, I have a website, www.drumsongsanctuary.com. So that's a place people can go. I'm fairly accessible. And
you offer, you offer the counseling, also offer shamanic ceremonies by request, but then you also offer like group things like fire ceremonies and sweat lodges everything else, right? So folks, you can go if you're in the Chapel Hill, North Carolina area, or if you're going to be around here sometime and you're interested in getting to know Miriam or seeking her guidance, then check out her website and you can find out all the information there.
All this being said, the most important thing from my perspective is love. And so what I find in nature is love, pure, unadulterated, oozing out of the pores of every being that's on that nature path is love. And it reflects back at us and it helps us to see it within ourselves. And it's the only healing force that I work with, to love ourselves and look out into that beautiful natural world and see. Yeah, there's a lot of other things that happen out there too. You know, there's a whole food chain, but I think we can find a lot of love in nature, in our own and out in the natural worlds. So. Mm.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this beautiful conversation today.
Yes, thank you, Miriam. It has been wonderful to talk with you.
Until next time, Lizzie.
Thanks, Natalie.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. You can show your gratitude and help others find these conversations by subscribing and leaving a review on iTunes or whatever app you're listening through.
Leaving a review will help us grow this network of earth lovers and intuitive-minded folks. You can also help us share these conversations by liking our Dream Freedom Beauty page and sharing your favorite episode on Facebook. For exclusive content and rewards, support us on Patreon.
Thank you so much, and until next time, many blessings.